That's what Labor said government did, and there was a good deal of truth in their complaints. Quite a bit of friction in that industry and friction in others as well. Overall, wages do not keep up with inflation. Some parts of the economy, labor does better than in others. Historians have argued a great deal about whether the Civil War spurred, really was the takeoff point for the great economic development in the latter decades of the 19th century, or whether it actually retarded development that was already in place, just about to take off in the 1850s, and then here comes the war and completely discombobulates the economy by forcing production into areas that would not have been emphasized without the war. People are still arguing about this. Historians are still arguing about it, but I think it's safe to say a couple of things. One is that all of the technological breakthroughs that helped to fuel this late 19th century explosion of the American economy were in place before the Civil War. The war, the demands of the war, did not yield a number of breakthroughs that would then be turned to peacetime uses after the war. That simply didn't happen. The technology was in place. The other thing that can be said about the war as a, if you're looking at it in the broader pattern of 19th century economic development, is that it marked an absolute watershed in terms of a redistribution of wealth in the United States, skewed dramatically toward the North, dramatically toward the North. For while the South largely lay in ruins in 1865, Northern production was not only healthy, but growing. And that disparity would continue for many decades. In fact, the gap would widen for many decades. It wouldn't be until well into the 20th century, with the rise of the Sun Belt, that the South came to rival the North and West in terms of economic strength and diversity. The story of the economy in the North during the war is really a quite spectacular one. Let's move on to non-military legislation pushed by the Republican Party during the war. The Republicans weren't just fighting a war, of course. They had had an ideology before the war. They had an economic program that they wanted to push, very similar to much of the old Whig economic program, and before the Whigs, the Federalist economic program, Hamiltonian ideas about the economy, vigorous involvement of the federal government in the economic sector, a national bank, pushing internal improvements, canals and river and harbor improvements and so forth, tariffs to protect fledgling industries. The Republicans were able during the war to push their agenda because the Democrats from the South, who had opposed much of this legislation in the past, were gone. It gave the Republicans a much freer hand to be successful with this kind of legislation. Legislation that gave impetus to the free labor and capitalist development that Republicans envisioned for the United States. This movement toward a powerful, modern economic colossus that the Republicans had in mind for the United States. Let's look at just four pieces of this legislation quickly. We'll start with the national banking system. The Republicans wanted to get away from the chaos of the state-chartered banks that had issued that welter of currencies. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the course. All of those currencies, some of which were only good in a very narrow area, others that might be accepted a bit farther away. But the picture was not one conducive to sustain national growth in the view of the Republicans. They wanted a more uniform national currency watched over by a central banking structure. In February 1863, Congress passed the National Bank Act. It was almost a strictly party line vote. Nearly 80% of the Republicans voted for it. More than 90% of the Democrats voted against it. Those Democrats in the old tradition of Andrew Jackson and other antebellum Democrats who had hated the idea of a national bank, had favored a more local control, had favored state and local banks. This legislation said that a bank could obtain a federal charter and issue national banknotes up to 90% of the value of national bonds it held. This spurred sale of bonds to help the war effort as well. In March 1865, a 10% tax was placed on all state banknotes, and those were soon driven out of circulation. State banks were forced to apply for federal charters. By the end of 1865, state banks held just 1/6 of the nation's assets. Another 5 years, they had virtually disappeared.